All right, well, Todd, thank you so much for coming on. It's nice to, I think, formally meet you now. I've met you once before, but I think, I don't know if I ever actually introduced myself. So thank you for coming on. Can I get you coffee or water or anything? Or?
I'm good for now.
Okay, great. So like I mentioned before, it's just a conversation. It's not going to be segmented or edited or anything like that. And then you just keep the mic right in front of you the whole time. Other than that, I think we can get started. So you are a coach and a teacher. Is that how you describe yourself?
Yeah, they both happened at the same time. I was an athlete in a couple different sports in university, and I fell into education. All my roommates were applying for education. I had my kin degree and wasn't sure what I was going to do with it, so I applied kind of on a whim and got in. And my mom said for years, forever, I should be an educator, just based on who I was as a kid. And then during that same time, I started coaching more and got involved with the sport of cheerleading. And then from there, both of my careers kind of took off at the same time. And it kept building. And for a long time, we were building family and working full time and coaching, which was lots. And then when our kids got a little bit older, I went to half-time teaching, which was challenging from a teaching point of view because you're not there as much. But as far as being a dad, it gave me lots of freedom to that. And I was kind of hemming and hawing about it, but then one of my principal at the time, he said, I did it when I was young. It was the best idea. You should do it. And so he sold me on it, and he helped me make it happen. And then so I've been half-time ever since, which is great because it allows me to have two careers where I can do both. And you always compromise a little bit because of that. However, it fits my personality to be able to do a couple different things at the same time. So if someone asked me, I would probably say, I was a coach first. And then if they prodded more, a teacher as well. But they're really the same job. I guess the only difference is kids have to go to school. But kids want to be at their sport.
For the most part, that's really good. Did you know right from the beginning that you wanted to do coaching and teaching, or you said you kind of fell into it a little bit?
I think everybody grows up knowing that they want to be, unless they're really focused on one particular idea or career, but they know what their mom does, and they know what their dad does, and they know what a teacher does. And I think everybody can be a teacher to some extent. And everyone teaches at any job that they have, whether or not you're managing or talking to customers or whatever. But an educator requires some patience, and you have to have this sense of community that maybe you wouldn't have in a sales job per se. And then as far as coaching goes, I hit a point where I knew I wasn't going to be an athlete anymore. An athlete just takes up too much of your time and energy. But I still want to stay in sport. And it was also a chance to work with people who are really passionate about what they do and also innovate in a different way. The sport of cheerleading was kind of new when we started it, and it was developing as we were growing. So the whole sport's only about 40 years old, and most of the people who started the very first gym, the very first event production, are still around, and phone them up and have a conversation with them, and they're really great about sharing their knowledge. And so it was just it was neat to be a part of that. When we were doing it, we didn't realize that was the case. But now looking back at it, it's neat to see all those different things and how it turned into something really cool. And where it will go in the next 30 years, it'll probably be entirely different.
Yeah, it's been growing pretty fast, as I understand it.
There was lots of it was kind of like the Wild Wild West where everyone was doing kind of whatever. And then there was some rules and regulation and administration that came along with that, and some national and international governance. And now it's at a point where I think the sport's trying to figure out where it wants to go. I always compare it to something like snowboarding, where you have this beautiful sport of snowboarding that I know it's more than that, but you know, they do it because they love it. Mm-hmm. But I think if a snowboarder had to decide between getting a gold medal in the X Games or the Olympics, they might lean towards the X Games, you know, or World Cup would be a good example too.
Right.
And cheerleading's kind of stuck there. They're trying to decide, do we want to do the traditional sport model, or do we want to do something entirely different? Mm-hmm. I lean towards the different. I think the traditional sport model has its strengths, but we've seen over the last few years with different cases and negative things that it's broken in lots of ways.
Yeah.
And the Olympic model is wonderful in spirit, but weird and hard in a functioning way. So
yeah, well, it's only so often to the Olympics.
So I guess we'll see where it goes and how that happens. I've kind of dabbled in a little bit of the governance at provincial and national levels, and it's just a very slow, like, kind of political machine, and so you have to just let that happen, as opposed to just coaching with 20 athletes every day or a few times a week. That's so much more enjoyable than trying to build and do all that other stuff.
Is it slow just because of disagreements with the governments of the?
I think there, at least here in Canada, it's challenging because you have, actually similar to Canadian government problems, every province has different needs and different issues. They also are in different different spots in that maturity of a sport organization provincially. And so as a national organization, it's really hard to get it all together and meet everyone's needs. And so that's going to take a long time. But there's a few things. And the best part is if you meet anybody at a competition or you sit down, they all are on the same page as far as why we're doing it, mm-hmm. why we love it, and why it's really important to keep moving it forward. So with that hope and that passion, eventually it'll get there. It's just going to take some time. And the other part of it too is, as a national organization, you need funding. And once you have staff and you have things in place, then you can start doing all the great work. But it's kind of a cart and horse thing. So that, once that kind of falls into place, it'll be way better.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. One, it's good that everybody's on that same page too, especially in a sport like that where, like, it's not only are there individual teams, but you've got gyms, and gyms are businesses, and people are, at the end of the day, are competing as businesses as well.
So yeah, that's another interesting part of our sport, where most sports are non-profit, and even as a gymnastics gym example, or even hockey, everything's non-profit. Most of your coaches aren't paid. They are volunteers, and so it just runs in a kind of different way. I guess we would be compared more so to, let's say, the Blades.
Right.
You know, not in level or capacity, but in the sense that, you're right, we're a business, but then we run as a nonprofit, but at the end of the day, you still have to keep the lights on and pay your bills. And that can make people make, not the wrong decision, but not the right decision necessarily for the sport, but you have to pay your mortgage too. That's created just as many successes as it has problems, I suspect, in our sport.
Yeah, but you ever run into issues with that? People just not understanding that?
Mm-hmm. Well, at our club, we've always run it and made decisions like a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. We've never tried to make money, but it's nice when you can pay yourself and value what you're doing too. And parents understand that. They understand that it costs money, and they understand that we're paying for a bunch of things that other sports aren't. And so there's that. In our sport, there's also a lot of travel that's connected to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that costs money. But as far as the way I've always explained it to parents is, in a nonprofit model, there's lots of positives, but you also have to run everything by a board. And the board's made up of people who may or may not be as engaged and committed to the sport as some others. We don't have to do that. We can just make a decision and move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the biggest strength in the sport is, even from the top down, the biggest, you know, industry, they're always looking down, they're looking to athletes to find out what would make the sport better. Because if your customers are happy, so to speak, then they're going to continue in the sport. And so because of that, they've made a bunch of changes, and they've made it very competitive, so that someone who's been competing for 10 years can compete against someone who's only been doing it for 2 years, and there's some equity there, some, you know, there's some chance that things are going to work out and people are excited and happy when they go to competitions. And that's the whole point of sport anyway, is to have people engaged and be lifelong athletes, or at least participants in sport, and all the things that come along with that. So I think Sport Canada has, in the last 5 years, has revamped how they want it to look, and they've taken all of these different approaches, more scientific or maybe social approach to sport, and not so much about building something for a podium.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's really good. Yeah, well, it's I'm glad it's getting bigger too as a sport, that it's going in the direction it is, because I mean, obviously I'm involved in it in some degree, not directly, but it's fascinating. I remember I knew about it, about All-Star Cheerleading, before I was dating Jordan, but I remember going to the first comp I saw was watching Prairie Fire, was in one of the ones in Mormon a few years ago, and it just blew my mind. I was like, this is not at all what I expected. Like, you have this idea and you go and see it and it's way different. It's very, very cool.
It is. And it's like a little bit, I mean, you go to a competition and it's loud and it's noisy and the music all sounds the same. So there's like that, but it's a bit of like a rock concert. Like, it's live, it's different than, and you get to see the people on stage and you see them fall and sweat and perform, and you can see their excitement. This is the only performance sport I've really been involved in, or activity, and I've always shied away from them in the past, just because that's not my thing. Mm. But once you get on stage and you have that feeling like, oh, let's go do that again right away, and you see that on the athletes' faces too.
For sure. Yeah, it's so cool to watch, and you, like, once it's over, you want to see it again too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The United States is the hub of cheerleading. It's where it started, and by far the best cheerleading in the world happens there. And we went to this big competition called NCA, the National Cheerleading Association puts it on. And there's, I think, well, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000. It's the biggest comp in the world. Mm. And it was cool because at the final, they have preliminaries and then finals. And the finals are in this big, huge stadium, this big round stadium. And there's just thousands and thousands of people watching all these teams. But once a team is done, those athletes come up and sit in the stands with you.
Yeah.
So you imagine being at an Oilers game, or not an Oilers, well, years back, Oilers, where I go watch Wayne Gretzky, and after he's done playing, he comes and sits beside you.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, and like, so it's so like, you can go talk to them, and you can catch them on Instagram, and you can follow them and meet them at comps and take pictures. And that particular comp, it was so neat because we saw all those athletes, and at that time there was lots of, they called them cheerlebrities, so these people that everyone wanted to go see.
Cheerlebrities,
that's fun. Yeah, and then, but one of the moms sitting right beside us, she's like, oh yeah, that's my daughter down there, and she happened to be, that particular daughter happened to be very popular, and now she's a millionaire, she's an influencer, she does all sorts of things.
Oh wow, yeah.
She's actually now Gabby Butler, I think, someone saw me the other day, she's going to be in the WWE.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Yeah, so like, that was the person, she's on the floor, and her mom's sitting right beside us, and she's like, oh yeah, that's my daughter, and then it's like, she like gave us her phone to take some like selfies, and I'm like, this is just weird, weird compared to any other professional sport where there's that distancing and that separation between two people who really love the sport, as opposed to you can go hang out. And the same thing when we go to Worlds, you'll have the best people in the world and people who are there for the very first time, and you can be on the same field hanging out and stunting and sharing those experiences. And they get it. Yeah, it's really cool. And we're lucky in some ways to be near the United States because we have access to some of the best coaches, choreographers, and athletes in the world. Mm-hmm. So it allows Canada to have not a step up, but a closer connection to the hub of cheer.
Yeah, well, that proximity for sure would help, especially just because you don't have to go overseas, which takes less time. Yeah. I thought it was interesting too that, it was my understanding that at Worlds in Disney World, a lot of the teams are like practicing and warming up or just going over the stuff in the same areas at the same time as well. Is that correct? Like around?
Yeah. So when Worlds first started, you know, all the big players in the sport were like, okay, we need a world championship. Mm-hmm. And because it's, you know, hubbed in the States. Disney World is a great spot because it's big and it's got all the right facilities. And so essentially, the All-Star Resort, I think that's what it's called, and it's got like four big chunks of hotels or spaces, and the whole Cheerleading Worlds takes it over. Mm-hmm. And then there's a place called the Football Field, and it's just part of the sports complex, the sport resort. And it's just a big field with artificial grass, and everyone goes there to practice. And it's the only open space you can find.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And so they go there, and often there's like speakers playing. And if it's kind of cool if you have like a hotel room who looks it over, but for, you know, 17 hours a day, there's nonstop five, six, seven, eight music playing. And yeah. So it's that, and it's kind of neat. I like to compare it to hockey in some ways, because when I've traveled, people talk about hockey and they know Canada's hockey, you know, or curling. Like, everyone in the world comes to Canada to see curling, and same in the States. We were down there for a convention years back in Dallas, and we went to this big steakhouse, I think. It was just huge, because everything's big in Texas.
Yeah, of course.
And we're sitting there, and the waitress comes up, and she's like, "Hey, where are you from?" Because she heard our accents and stuff. She starts talking to us, and she asks us why we were there. She said, "We're here for a cheerleading conference." She's like, "Oh, that's cool. I used to cheer for years." And so then she talks about where she is, and she was at one of the best clubs in the world. And she talked about going to Worlds, and I have 7 championships. I'm like, "Oh, my God, like, that's amazing." And she's like, "Oh, you'll get there." And just, like, really, like, easygoing, and, like, it was just a really normal thing to be a cheerleader in Texas.
It's huge there, isn't it?
Yeah. And similar to, like, if you ran into some kid in Saskatoon and said, "Oh, I'm a hockey player," that'd be all
over. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah. I don't know what your experience was with Texas, but I found just in general, too, that was my experience with everybody. They were just so open, wanted to talk. I found them to be much, much nicer than everybody puts them out to be.
Yeah, I think there's some strong personalities and views, but I think from what I understand, everywhere I go, I try and like learn a little bit about that space just for curiosity's sake. But you know, just their history and how Texas was built, it makes sense that they're, you know, not protected, but like they know what they want and they're not gonna mess words about it. But yeah, as far as being friendly too, I've been to Dallas and a few other places. I'd love to go to Austin because I've heard like. It's like a more, not open-minded, but like a wider view of the world within a very straightforward Texas.
That's what I've heard too, yeah. It's a really interesting, like, it's a blue city and a red state.
Good way to say it.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. And apparently it's amazing. Food is really good, apparently, too.
Yeah, that's another cool thing. Like, that's part of the reason I enjoy coaching cheer in particular, is I love traveling. But traveling all the time when you have a family at home is probably not a good choice. So then I get my travel bug out by going to Dallas for the cheerleading conference for 5 days and this and that. And so then I can come home and just like, oh, okay, I felt good. And I've seen so much of the world. And every time we take athletes on trips, we try and make it more than just the cheer. Because you're spending lots of money, but also like, if you're there, why not go see something interesting or experience something Texas, you know? I think last time we went there, we went to see a basketball game, a college game.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It wasn't a big college game, but it was still pretty cool to watch. Mm-hmm. It's been a really cool opportunity for myself. And I'm trying to figure out what I want to do, if I want to keep coaching for the next few years or many years or not. And I find that I think that coaching in some ways, and there's probably lots of older coaches out there who disagree with me, is like a young person sport, you know? An 11-year-old wants to hang out with a cool 19-year-old, a Jordan.
Yeah.
Maybe not me necessarily. So I don't know. I think in some ways I want to like share that with someone else and let someone else have those experiences. And in order to do that, I have to step away or step off to the side somehow to let someone else do that too.
Oh, fair enough. You seem like you've put a lot of forethought into this.
Yeah, I have with my teaching as well as coaching, if I can't see like the broader end game or like where we're going with this, I have a hard time like moving forward. And I find that, at least in teaching, because I'm only half time, I do lots of release work. and you don't get to see the bigger picture. I don't get to see each classroom, like mm-hmm. your own classroom, and kind of take those 30 kids on this little journey for a year. But there's lots of positives to that too. So
yeah. How does teaching half-time work? I actually didn't know that you could do that until like this week.
I think most school divisions would prefer you were not half-time.
Fair enough.
And they'll push you to like, you maybe 50%, because then there's lots of teachers who teach 20%, 10%. Mm-hmm. And as you're coming up as a teacher, you'll potentially sub and then maybe get a 10% permanent, and then you slowly work yourself up to 100%. So it kind of works both ways. And but I think from a division point of view, if you have a teacher working 100%, you get 100% of that person's time. If you have someone working 50%, you usually get about 60 or 70% of them, because they're still prepping, they're still in the buildings, yeah. they're still doing all the things. So it's a win-win that way. And if you have a good teacher, then it doesn't matter. And that's how we kind of approach our, when we're staffing coaching too. We could probably do better as a club if we had 4 or 5 coaches coaching everything, because there's more consistency, mm-hmm. there's more expertise, it's just better overall. But then you don't allow as many other people to be part of it. And when you have someone who's good, who also is, you know, busy being a student and working a job and life, mm-hmm. and have time to do all that full time, so then this is a perfect way to get the best out of that person. And then they're also engaged and excited about being there every time that they're there for practice.
Yeah.
So for teaching, at least as far as I understand it, if I ever want to go back to full time, I just have to tell them and they'll say, yeah, okay. But otherwise, I can sit here at 50% for the rest of my career if I want to.
Did it make it that much more difficult going down to 50%?
Well, wage wise, I was able to offset that with paying myself at the gym.
Right.
So the gym allowed me to have that choice. I think like pension wise and all that other stuff, it doesn't maybe work out as well. But we just figured out differently. And as far as I'm not of the generation that wants to work 30 years and then retire.
I gotta break your body down and lie down for 10 years.
Well, even the idea of just like retiring, like I just want to take on something different, and I'll keep working and maybe less or differently. But I suspect in the next, you know, 30 years, I'll have some more education and 2 or 3 or 4 different jobs that I kind of do well throughout the year. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with being in a job if that's what you love doing. I've met very few people who like really love their job. Most people like their job, you know.
It pays the bills.
And then, you know, if you're not happy there, you can always be happy doing the other things that you like doing. Mm-hmm. And that's okay too. My dad worked for CP Rail for 35 years. Great job. And he generally loved what he did, especially loved the last, you know, 10 years of his life, because he was doing what he really loved to do. Mm-hmm. In the organization. But then once he retired, he started working at an auction place here in town, McDougal's.
Okay. Yeah.
And so he gets to like travel and go places and meet people and mm-hmm. build stuff, and like it's not a pressure, and he makes some spending cash to, you know, build stuff at the cabin. And he's so much more happier now, I think, because he's kind of doing what he likes, and he's like picking and choosing a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, some of that's just the flexibility of retirement, but the idea of picking and choosing what you want to do and still paying the bills mm-hmm. is maybe a better choice, you know, over a long haul, in order to find some happiness as opposed to dredging through life.
I would think so. Well, I think that's fortunately, not only is the lifespan getting longer, but people's health spans are getting longer, so long as they take care of their bodies. So it's I think it's more people are realizing that you can retire or just reduce your hours, and then just you can do what you want to do for so long as you take care of your body.
Yeah. So. I mean, the other side of that too is if you minimize what you think you need in your life, mm-hmm. you don't need to work as much. One of the EAs that I work with, I used to work with her at the first school I was at, and her son, I might be getting this story a little bit wrong, but the idea is the same. He was a teacher, and she's super excited about that, but he spent 2 or 3 years like hanging out at the beach, teaching surfing in Hawaii, and then a ski instructor.
Yeah.
like making very little money, just enough to get by.
Yeah.
They were super happy.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a cool approach.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, there's so many people doing that. And like you said, it's like, you can do it. There's a lot of people that can't do what they want to right now. Like, that is the reality of some people's lives. But most people, I believe personally, are making excuses as to just why they're not at least trying to do what they want. And
there's lots of pressure, like, yeah, from parents or society or whatever.
Yeah.
Kingston and Jonah, our sons, are he's going into grade 9 and going into grade 7 next year. And I'm super excited for them to grow up in a world where if you want to get married, go ahead. But if you don't, that's okay. If you want to have kids, if you want to work a job, if you want to, like, get a degree, if you want to start a business, like, all those are choices. And that's a little bit of privilege sitting there, because, I mean, if some people don't have those choices. However, I think you're right, where you just have to decide that what's more important to you, your health and your happiness, or having more money so you can buy this. And that's okay, too. They're all okay. But I think society's starting to, at least here in North America, that you can choose and then figure it out. And I was talking to a friend of mine. She went to university. She was on the team with me a long time ago. And she got her master's, and then she got her PhD, and she spent probably 15 years doing university. At the end of it, she really didn't have a job, and she's like, I just waste a lot of time and money, and now what do I do? And so she ended up keeping at it and moving to a couple different countries, and now she's she has a job in New Zealand, and so hopefully that works out for her. But that's an example of someone who took a very different route. Good. I'm sure her parents at some point were like, what are you doing, man? Like,
yeah, 10 years in, you're gonna be like, okay.
And you have a whole bunch of education you can't do anything with.
Yeah.
But that's what she loved, and so I guess you just make some decisions and figure it out.
Yeah. You know, I completely agree. Like, whatever choice you want to make, as long as you're not hurting anybody else or yourself, is a completely fine choice. But don't, like, if you have the choices or the options, don't convince yourself that you don't, you know, because some people don't have those options. And so if you can see that they're available to you, then I believe that it's important that you seek out what you can do.
Yeah, it's a privilege to have a choice. You gotta be grateful for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
And the things I've heard about you seem like you're a very integrable person. And it's really fascinating to hear things like that, because a lot of people just back down and bend over backwards when they encounter any adversity. So it's really nice to hear things about people when you hear that they, that you are trying to be very inclusive and understand the people in different communities around you and trying to help them out. And then it was a really nice story, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's, I think as teachers or anyone in the community who connects or influences others or leads others, you're responsible for, you know, making this world a better place.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're teaching kids, like, you're constantly, you see them for 6 hours a day. Their parents see them sometimes less than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a huge influence, and those are future leaders. And what I worry about is, like, if they don't, because in high school, there's so many things I didn't know or didn't find out about until much later. And part of that was just the time. They just weren't teaching or talking about that kind of stuff. But I'm sure there are schools in Saskatchewan, we'll say specifically, where kids don't hear about really relevant things that you'd think everybody would know.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they become voters, they become managers, and how do they navigate that without kind of seeing all the different sides?
Yeah.
But then it's a struggle too, because I'm also a parent, so I send my kids to school, and our family values don't match necessarily the school's values.
I think a lot of people are having that issue.
So then, but neither's wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're wrong, like, some of them are. But, like, that doesn't make me right. So, like, how do you navigate that in a way where, and then trust that those professionals are doing their job? Like, I hope the parents trust that I'm doing my job. And I think that's where the division comes in, too. They're like, okay, we can't be over here, and we can't be way over on the other side. We have to be somewhere in the middle. So the parents understand that we are taking care of their kids. And school divisions, they change. Sometimes it just takes a long time. And so if there's myself pushing and a few other people pushing, I don't know how many people are pushing, eventually they go, all right, let's lean over here a little bit more. And again, in the end, it's a job. So if I don't like it, I can go work somewhere else if I want.
Mm-hmm.
But I think teachers overall, they realize that we have a really sweet gig. We have a rewarding profession. We're paid well. We have opportunities to spend time with our families. And so most are like, eh, I don't want to give that up to push too much. So I'm not sure where I'm going to go with that in the future. Right now, I'm kind of content where I am. I give myself about, I'm 2 years into like a 4-year gap I gave myself to figure out what I want to do with the next 50 years of my life. And so I feel like I'm trying to restart again and feel like I was when I was 19 going to university. And
yeah.
Like, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Figure it out, yeah.
Yeah. But it was so much easier to do it when you're 20 because you got nothing.
Yes, yeah, anything is...
So like, whatever, you know, like... Yeah. But now I'm comfortable and I have lots of stuff and I have all the things I need. So I like to like compromise those a little bit. It's a much, much more challenging decision.
You're putting a lot more on the line.
Yeah. But again, it's a privilege like we talked about before. So then I'm grateful about it. And I'm getting closer to where I think I want to go. And it's leaning into what you were saying before about trying to make the world a better place and you know, saying the things that need to be said and advocating for those who maybe cannot. And just opening the world's view just a little bit wider so that more people or more ideas are acceptable.
Mm. Well, I really admire your understanding of your role as a coach and a teacher, because I think that a lot of people, like you said, they get a lot of those points right. They talk about how we need to expand what people are seeing and learning and this and that. But then they don't really mean that. They don't really mean that we need to expand these kids' understanding of the world. They mean that we need to point it towards what I think they should know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems like you really understand that you should give all perspectives, and that's important.
I agree with you. That's something I struggle with too, because sometimes it's easy to give your perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So I generally, when I've my approach is like, this is my perspective, this is what I like to approach or present. But I always look to see, like, what else are you getting so that you do get that wider approach or that wider view? I don't know. It's hard because you're just the one person. You have no idea what that child or that athlete or that student has all around them.
And what they're going through.
Yeah. At a school, you're representing your school and your community, your administrator, your other colleagues. And so you have a lot more people that you have to be responsible for when you say and do things. At the cheer gym, that's one of the nice things about it, is we are like a little school.
Mm-hmm.
But I get to be like the owner and the principal and the teacher.
Sure, yeah.
So then we've made mistakes along the way and made choices that if I went back, I would definitely change. And as I get older and my kids get older, I look at the world not in a softer way, but I think a more compassionate way. And so then that changes how we do things. But it is nice because we can do what we think is right. And if those customers don't like it, then they can go somewhere else. Hopefully they choose to stay with us. And that's probably been our biggest success.
You guys have a bit of a monopoly right now, Saskatoon, at least.
Well, we haven't had any competition, really. So we always say that, like, if all of a sudden another club decided to come in and open a club and they're all about winning,
mm-hmm.
and we're not, are we going to lose a bunch of kids who want to be the best and want to win?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they going to stay with us where we, you know, we try and build that bigger picture and have a space for everyone and meet people where they're at? And there's just two different approaches to the same challenge. But it's nice to be able to do that and feel comfortable that we did what we thought was best, and then have parents come back to us and say, you know what, we really appreciate it. And then they start talking to us about all the things that they appreciate, and then they're mirrored on all our values and the things we put in place. And you're like, they're getting it. Like, they figured it out.
Yeah.
Exactly what we were hoping they were going to get, they got. And
that's going to be so rewarding.
That is. It's very cool. Yeah.
Jordan tells me sometimes about, like, just the stuff that I guess that team in particular does outside of gym, and it's just every time I hear about it, I'm like, it's really cool that you guys are going out and doing that. And then I hear about just I don't know if it's you specifically setting it up, but just like a lot of, it seems like there's a lot of coaching for development going on in your gym as well, instead of just coaching for performance. Like, it seems like as a team, all of your coaches are wanting to get better, or at least trying to instill that in them, and just trying to develop this place where people can come and not only become better athletes, but better people. It really seems like that's something that...
Yeah. Christina and I started the gym, and then a friend of ours who's also on the university team with us, Craig, he's also a teacher. He teaches at a high school here in town. And so because we had two educators on, you know, making decisions, we always lean towards those ideas that educators take. And that, ideally, an educator isn't all about the curriculum and marks and stuff. They're about the person and allowing kids to grow and develop into their best person. And so we tried. I think that was reflected in our gym to start with. And then after that, all of our coaches since then have kind of taken that on and understood it. And so they are constantly trying to do things so that they can be better coaches, specific to their roles as mentors and leaders. And then also, I mean, winning is important too.
Of course.
Like, no one wants to be on a team that doesn't win. So like that's important as well, but it has to be balanced with the other side of it. We've had coaches who have come to our gym from other places with different perspectives on the sport. And they have a real hard time, like, they're just like always butting heads and like, I don't understand, like, why are you doing this? And you're like, well, because. And one coach in particular, she pushed us lots. And she made us better in a lot of different ways. But like sometimes it was just so frustrating. And like years after, I've had conversations with her and she goes, yeah, I was a butthead. I didn't get it at all. And she's now an educator. So she, like, now it's kind of come full circle. And so, we're very lucky to be able to, like, play out the things that I think should happen in education. Not that it's wrong, but everyone has a different perspective on what education should look like.
Yeah.
And we can play it out here in our gym. And so a lot of that is building community and relationships. And so we try and do other things. And it's also about taking care of athletes as people and helping them mentally and spiritually and emotionally. And maybe not spiritually, that's maybe a reach, but emotionally and physically, and then searching out things that will allow us to do that.
Well, educating and coaching is developing and evolving so fast. Like, it's I'm not really in either of those spaces, but just from what I've read and see, it seems like it's becoming less, like, people are starting to understand a little bit more that it's not only about, like, okay, this is my curriculum or this is my lesson plan and, like, you need to follow this. And it's not only about, like, getting better at describing a skill or an ability and, like, just showing that over and over again. It's becoming more like, okay, like, how do I show this skill or ability better? How do I demonstrate it? How do I help my athlete or mentoree become a better person, which will translate into their discipline as well? And it seems like just coaching people is becoming a lot, and educating people is becoming a lot more popular than just the topic. Instead of just trying to spew out information that you have.
Yeah, I think over the last few years, there's been doors open on practices and places that were very toxic and not so nice, and even like, that's even sugarcoating it, really, really bad, some of the stuff that was going on. And we're in a place where people are, I don't know, able to or feel confident enough to speak about it and bring it to light. And now things are being forced to change, because I don't think most things change unless you really, really have to. And if you're a person who tries to change yourself and better yourself, I think I'm someone who tries to do that, it's still really hard, because there's pain that comes along with it. Either you're alienating a friend of yours who sees things differently, or you're ruffling some feathers at work, or it's just challenging. And it's supposed to be challenging. That's the whole point. You're trying to change who you are, and so you have to change what you do and do it differently. And in the coaching world, I don't see this so much in education, because I think, well, I teach in an elementary system, so I think the elementary is different, because you you see these kids as kids. You know, I get like 40 hugs every day I go to school. You're not going to get that in high school.
No.
And they're adults, you know? Like, so it's just a different world. But I think they, I think education has got it for a very long time. Coaching, especially in, you know, some of the bigger markets, in North America, it would be in the States, like, it is profit-driven. And the professional sports lead amateur sports to do certain things that maybe they shouldn't. I would say the same thing for a university. University has its standards, and they're kind of untouchable in how they do and what they do and don't do, because they're needed. They have customers coming in. And so they influence how high schools teach, which isn't always the best thing, because you have to take all these prerequisites, you have to do all these things, you're worried about marks. Instead of taking that drama class that you really think would be cool, or doing this, or doing an internship or something. So, but I mean, you can always change it and make life what you want it to be, and education's always there. So there's room for people who are brave enough to take a step.
Yeah. I think I agree with you too, that things don't really change unless they need to. Especially because, like you said, it's hard, it hurts people. And then there's a lot of people that solidify their identities in something they've been doing, especially if they've been doing it for 5, 10, 15 years plus.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very difficult. It feels like trying to change your skin sometimes, trying to rectify something that may not have necessarily been an error, but just there's something better that you can't, or different even.
Or you're just evolving to someone new and different. Yeah, like, yeah, it's, yeah. I mean, that's kind of a, another takeaway I have from being a teacher and a coach is I'm always hanging out with people who are 19, 20, or 16. They got bright minds, and the future is so wide, and they see the world from a generation that I'm not part of. And so it keeps me young, so to speak. It, like, it makes me want to stay in shape because I'm hanging out with these people. I ask them questions often about, like, just different topics, and it's just really interesting to hear how they see the world. And sometimes I'll see something that's a problem in society or something I want to change, and I talk to them, and it's a non-issue. And I'm like, oh, it's not a problem that needs to be fixed, like, because it's not a big deal.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I love those conversations when you bring something up to somebody, and they just look at you like, why are you concerned with that? And I'm like, I'm not sure. I don't know why.
I'm not sure anymore. Yeah, so there's lots of hope in where our world's going and how we're doing things. It's, we have, at our school, we have probably 4 or 5 in our club, 2 for sure, immigrants from Ukraine. Obviously leaving a place that's not a healthy place right now. And, you know, Ukraine gets lots of press for a whole bunch of good and bad reasons. Meanwhile, war and immigration and refugees is happening all the time.
Everywhere.
You know, in Africa, it's nonstop, and we seem to just kind of ignore it for whatever reason. But when they're in your club and you're talking to them daily and building relationships, it just makes you, like, think about how easy we have it in some ways. When I'm thinking about, like, what I want to do next, I almost feel bad I do feel bad in some ways because I'm trying to change the life I have, which is really, really good right now. So, like, why would you change that? Like, it's not everything I want. But for me, myself, it's not that I want more, but I want a different challenge, and I don't feel like I grow unless I have some pain or some struggle or figure something else out. And so I'm trying to push myself off the edge to do something different. And I'm hoping that I'll grow because of that, but then also Kingston and Jonah, our sons, will see us doing that and go, oh, okay, that's, you know, Dad did that, so I should do that too.
Well, I think that goes for everybody. That's where everybody grows, and that's this psychologist Vygotsky's theory of proximal development, that you need to push yourself beyond the edge of where you previously were.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not uncomfortable or painful, then it's probably not adding a whole lot of benefit. Not that you need to destroy yourself in the process, but you need to challenge yourself.
Yeah.
You need to get better.
I was talking to Jordan and Fever last night about that, about how I can't remember who was talking about it. I heard it on a podcast, or maybe I read it somewhere, but essentially the rule of thirds, this coach was sharing with an athlete where, you know, a third of your practices or training sessions should be amazing, a third should be okay, and a third should be terrible. And if they're not terrible, that means you're not pushing yourself.
Yeah.
And if they're all great, that means it's too easy. Or you are pushing yourself, but so you gotta find that, like that balance. And that's a great analogy for life, because some days are awesome, and the next day you're like, man, I got a flat tire and I fell on the ice and it's just a shitty day.
It seems like sometimes everything goes wrong.
If you can look past it, and like I think at the school I have the opportunity to spend a lot of time with elders, and they are great. Anyone who's older, most people who are older, are they just like, it's okay, it's just, it'll pass, just don't worry about it. And it's too easy to get stuck in life or in a young person's mind where it's just hard, but that's okay.
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective that elders seem to have. And I think, unfortunately, it seems like you can only come with just that decades of just being alive. Do you understand that, like, this shit right now doesn't matter? It's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And so
I remember talking to my parents about years ago when I was, like, 30, and they were, I guess they'd be, like, 55 or so, 60, and I was talking to them about this the other day, and I was saying, I didn't get it, and I could see you were looking at me like, you don't understand, just be patient, like, whatever. And then while I was having the conversation as, like, a 40-some-year-old, and they're, like, pushing 70, I was like, I'm doing it again. Like, I don't get what you understand, because I'm just not there yet.
Yeah.
And so there is... If you are patient enough and vulnerable enough to listen to someone who's older and just take their wisdom for what it is, wisdom that you can't have until you are that age, it can really, like, soften your path a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And some cultures do that really well. I found that indigenous cultures, particularly like Plains Cree, is the one I've spent the most time with. You hear that all the time. And in our Western culture, I don't know if we have the same respect for someone who's a senior person, whatever you want, however you want to define that, and the knowledge they have.
No, I think you're right. I think there isn't as much respect. Well, there's so many, like, I don't, not necessarily like derogatory terms, but there's like lots of ways to refer to old people that are just compare them to being senile. Like, it's not always the wisdom that's being shown. And yeah, you're right. It's very important to, even if you can't take that perspective of older people or anybody else, it's just trying to at least listen to them, because the only way to have somebody else's perspective is to be them. So you can't have their perspective wholly. So you need to at least listen and try.
Yeah, with an open mind. And you don't have to agree or even understand it, but like, now it's in your head and it's going to lead you some way. There's a new TV series with Chris Hemsworth called Limitless.
I think I've heard of it.
Heard of it?
Yeah.
It's worth watching. Okay. Especially for someone my age, because he's kind of in the same spot, and he's like thinking about future years and how he can be healthier and stuff. But there's one episode about aging and being older, and just kind of like, as soon as you start talking with him, I was like, that's exactly it. And you can tell he gets touched in a way where he realizes that there's so much more to do and to know, and to just kind of be aware of that when you're making decisions. And being hard on yourself sometimes, because that's often what happens, is you beat yourself up about it.
Yeah. Yeah, when it's so easy to come down on yourself. I don't know, it's just, it seems like that's a lot of people's default setting, unfortunately, is being hard on themselves. Not that it's always a bad thing. I think sometimes it's very, very valuable to be down on yourself, but...
It has to be balanced.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. When it just... It has to be constructive as well. If you're beating yourself down and you're not using any of that negative progress to learn from, then it's just negative progress. So you need to be able to rebound from it somehow, or use it as a tool to get better.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. Because it just, I don't know. And I think that's where typically most development comes from, is some kind of, I think the net gain, if you're developing, the net gain is positive, but somewhere in that you need to be taking a couple steps backwards and making failures to, so you can understand where you need to improve, right? There was, the other thing I wanted to ask you about was, you said that in university you did a couple of sports, or was wrestling one of them? Was that the, were they all combat sports you did, or?
Well, because my dad worked for the railway, we bounced around the province lots, or more than Christina did, as an example. So all there was to play in small town was hockey.
Okay.
So that's all I played. And then when we got to Saskatoon, all of a sudden there's all these other doors that open.
Mm-hmm.
And so wrestling was just an easy one. Why did I gravitate towards wrestling? I think there was some bullying that led me to, like, I need to find a group of friends who's got my back.
Fair enough, yeah.
So, like, there's that. And there's some confidence that comes with it, too. And I turned out to be okay at it. So, like, all right. So I did that in high school. And I played all the other sports. I played most sports I've tried or played for a long time. And then I went to university because I always knew I was going to go to university. It wasn't a question. I didn't know what I was going to take or what that looked like. I was just going to go. And I've always approached university as an opportunity to grow as a person and to learn something. And if it equated in a job, great, but that wasn't required. So I went there truly to wrestle. I wanted to, because I think I'm good at lots of different things, but I've never had the, like, focus to, like, train one thing, become the very best at it.
Right, yeah.
And since then, I've learned that I'll never do that. It's not in me. So I've just accepted that I can do a bunch of different things. So teaching and coaching require you to, or an entrepreneur required you to be good at a whole bunch of things.
Right.
Anyway, so then I went there to wrestle, and I got a degree along the way, and then I found cheer, and so I was on the cheerleading team too. But wrestling is it's an amazing sport. And when I was in wrestling, everyone used to look at me weird, like, ooh, that's kind of a weird thing you're doing there, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you mean? And now looking back at it, now I'm out of it, I'm like, oh, it is kind of weird.
It's a little bit, I don't know. I wrestled too, and I got that a lot, but I don't know. Once I was in it, that went away.
So there's, like, a bit of a brotherhood there.
Yeah.
And a sisterhood, because there's girls there too, but, like, you just kind of get it. And when you're in the room, it doesn't matter. But, like, that's the best shape I've ever been in my life. And it teaches you things about yourself. Kingston and Jonah both asked about wrestling, and they recently, because their cousins involved in it, said they want to do MMA. And I'm like, not yet. And the biggest reason is because, like, when you're wrestling, if you're, like, I remember one match in university, so I was, let's say, 19,
mm-hmm.
and I was against someone who's far better than I was, and I got thrown for 5 points, lying on my back, pinned in front of all my friends, and, like, I wanted to just cry. Like, it was so hard on my heart.
Yeah.
I was like, how do you, like, hold a 10-year-old down? Like, it's controlled, scored bullying, sort of. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I do. I understand.
You know, yeah. So I'm like, I don't want you to go through that yet. Like, wait until you're a little older and you're a little more confident in yourself, and then do it. Mm-hmm. And if you're a little bit behind, who cares? You can make up the difference if you really want to.
Yeah.
So I think at some point they might. Anyway, but I love that sport. And it let me see lots of the country, and push myself harder than I'd ever pushed myself before. And the coach that was coached me for most of my career, his name was Todd as well. He taught me so many coaching lessons.
Oh yeah.
I remember one, I biked everywhere, so I commuted all the time, and we'd have to bike all the way to St. Joe's. So you go to university, then bike home to City Park, and then all the way to St. Joe's every single day. And in the middle of the winter, that just sucks.
Yeah.
And so I was biking, and my bike broke down, and I was just having a hard week. I was just like, oh, this is too much. So I phoned my coach up and said, hey, like, I just can't, I just need a day off. He's like, well, why can't you come to practice? You gotta come to practice. I'm like, well, but I can't. I literally can't anymore. I didn't want to come, but now I literally can't make it there. And he's like, well, where are you now? And I was like, well, I'm at home. It's like, Kai, our assistant coach, will be there in 10 minutes to pick you up. And, like, so he taught me, he's like, no matter how you're feeling, you've got to come to practice. It's a commitment you made. You're going to feel better at the end of it. And I was like, huh, that's a cool life lesson. And over the years, I've done the same to some other athletes where I'm like, okay, I'll come pick you up.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So, yeah, well, that's really valuable. Do you think that losing and feeling that bad after the match was valuable, or do you think it was?
I had far more defeats than successes. I can think of two or three moments in sport where huge successes, and, like, the emotion is still, like, stuck on me. I can feel how I felt when I was there. And I mean, a lot of your failures you forget about. Rightfully so, you should, because you want to dwell on them. But I mean, that's how you get better. That's how you like train harder. That's how you do a little bit extra. And I found when I was an athlete, maybe it's just, like I spend all my time in the cheerleading world, so it's just a different place than many other sports. But I feel like in the past there was this idea of you need to work harder and you need to do more and you need to like push to win. And I think athletes these days also want to push and they want to be better, but not at the expense of everything else.
Right.
And so I think sports that require you to train 20, 30 hours a week, people walk away from that because they're like, I want some balance. And sports that push you on a real high level and winning is everything, kids get burnt out and just go, ugh, it's just not worth the stress that goes along with it.
Yeah.
And the sport model in Canada, generally speaking, is they want athletes to continue when you're like 60-year-olds playing hockey. That's all. That's what sport's all about. Mm. And for hockey, it works. Soccer, I think lots of people play older. Mountain biking's become huge now for older men, like generally, like you see all these 40, 50-year-olds buying mountain bikes or cycling. For women, I don't know if there's as many choices, but it's starting to expand to the point where there's a world championships for 60 and over playing soccer in Australia. So, hey, we get to go travel, go spend time with my lady friends, and I get to compete, but all in balance with life. And, there's so much research right now about how to live longer and live better living longer, and it's all the simple things that you would expect. It's like eating well and exercising and strength training and sleeping well and managing your stress. Mm-hmm. And sport does a great job of doing all that for you.
Yeah, no, 100%. Because it packages it a lot into one thing. Mm-hmm. And it's so great that way, and it's so good for your body. Like if there was a pill that had the same benefits of sport or exercise on the body and the mind, whoever came up with it would be the richest person on the planet.
It would be sanctioned. It would be illegal.
Yeah. Because it's ridiculous. And especially when you look at these studies and these people have talked about these things and just the reduction in all-cause mortality from just like exercising for like a half hour a day is unbelievable. And people aren't doing that. But and I think for your mind that just finding adversity and then overcoming it is just so important for just your everyday activities.
Yeah, and it's a practice for your life. Like all of a sudden you're in life and you lose your job, that's adversity and that's hard. You have to move from your country, that's hard. Mm-hmm. But you don't have a choice in that. You choose to play this sport. You choose to put yourself in a place where your coach is gonna make you do things you don't wanna do. Mm-hmm. And you always know that you can just leave if you want to, and it's artificial, but the lessons you learn are real, and you can take those and use them anywhere you want. I've always been someone where like I love challenges. I love doing something I've never done before. And then once I've done it, I'm like if it's really hard, I don't do that again. It's just painful. But I want to do it once just to say I did it. And so anytime there's a challenge or someone says, no, you can't do that, it's like flares a bunch of things in my brain. And I think a lot of that's just like that sport, like you're okay, I'm against somebody or I'm doing this and can I do it? I don't know and I'm gonna try. But I've never thought like, no, I can't. Sometimes often, no, I don't want to, but no, I can't has never been the choice.
Well, that's just like, yeah. It's just the way you come out of it is just such an amazing feeling. Like there's somebody that I see pretty much every day, and they're trying to work on their health. And so they've begun walking every day, which is prescribed by their doctor. And the one day they were saying to me, they were like, oh, I don't want to go. I don't want to go to the track and walk. And I said, the coolest part is that if you go today because you don't want to go so badly, it's going to feel so much better than any other time you've gone. And mm-hmm. sure enough, I saw them the next day and they're like, it felt pretty good. there's something about that where you just, those switches flip in your mind when you're down in the dumps and you, because you're winning a battle against yourself, essentially. Mm-hmm. There's something in you saying, like, no, you don't need to do this. Like, go relax or go have the donut or don't, like, do whatever you want. And then you just, when you can finally look yourself in the mirror and say, no, I'm doing this, and then you complete it, I don't think there's much better than that, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, The farther you are away from your goal or the more extreme it is, it always feels better. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was wrestling, cutting weight, which in some ways it was seen as like a terrible thing to do and unhealthy, but based on lots of fasting research that's now available to you, it's like, mm-hmm. that was a pretty good idea. But after you like fast for 2 or 3 days, plus work and plus doing school and all that stuff, a glass of water tastes so good.
Oh, yeah.
Just a simple, plain glass of water. And it's that same idea. It's like, if you know, it's when you don't want to do it and you step up and do it, it's huge. And it's fun watching athletes do that. It's fun watching kids in school who are like so down on themselves about, I can't read or I can't do this, can't do that. And then they do it. And I'm, this year and last year, I'm in a really sweet spot because I teach kindergarten to grade 5, all phys ed. So I'm like that fun uncle that comes and takes you to a playground.
Yeah.
And all I get to do is like celebrate things that they do. Like, hey, you were able to do that. And hey, you did that with the hoop. And oh, good job. And that was awesome. And this is nonstop like that. And it's just like, you couldn't ask for a, you know, a better way to spend your day.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't challenge me in the ways I'd like it to, so that's kind of something I'm struggling with. But as far as like the day-to-day and the reward that comes from that and the influence, the positive influence I can have on those kids, it's there's nothing better.
Yeah. Well, just, again, like just rewarding yourself with intrinsic things. Like it looks like, it sounds like you get so much value out of just doing those things,
mm-hmm.
which is really important. And then like you said, with like with weight cutting and the water tasting so good, is the ability of someone to delay the gratification or the mm-hmm. pleasure and just put it off. Like, even if it's the same day, just be like, I want this bag of chips, but I'm just going to wait an hour. Like, just stuff like being able to put it off feels so
good. Yeah, I like taking a treat and putting it in my backpack, and I can get it anytime I want, but then I just leave it there.
Yeah.
And then that's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. And there's like some like power in that. Like, I got it, but I'm not going
to
touch it.
Yeah, because it's so hard. Like, it's so, so hard not to. And when you just continually are able to say no to it, it feels pretty good.
So how do you feel about, like, you're a younger generation than I am, so how do you feel about the immediate gratification that happens in our society with social media, our iPhones, right. all that stuff, compared to maybe a world where that wasn't available to you? So I assume your parents did
yeah.
all that stuff, so they must see it differently.
I don't know. It's a tough one. It's it feels like a lot of people are succumbing to it, unfortunately, is what, I don't know anybody personally that is, like, everybody in my life, thankfully, is pretty well adjusted, but just, like, from seeing it on social media and seeing, like, I really like to read the comment sections on things just to see how crazy people are getting, and it seems like it's having a pretty significant toll on a lot of people's mental health, the fact that they can just get that hit all the time and just get gratified instant, or like they post a photo and they get so many likes and then they get so happy, and then you see these people that fall apart when they see one negative comment.
Well, and similar to like the walking and the working out, there's a physiological response
yeah.
to that,
mm-hmm.
and if you're not aware of that, all of a sudden it's easy to get, not addicted is not the right word, I don't want to minimize that word, but there's a loss of control that comes with it.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. One, it's effectively similar to a drug, right? So when you're just, you're staying that all day, and I think that, unfortunately, what I do see a lot of is people encouraging negative behaviors just because they're fun. And, like, not even necessarily, like drugs or sex or anything along those lines, but people are just encouraging people to just do whatever they want, which is leading to unhealthy lifestyles. That saddens me a little bit to see, because those people, once you get into that cycle, it's very hard to break.
Maybe that's the unhealthy side of that opportunity, where you can do anything you want and search out your passion, but then you can also do whatever you want. But that's not
yeah.
the case. Like, I think in our society there's lots of messages about being responsible to yourself and being your best self and being you and striving for greatness, whatever, however you define that. But there's not enough messages about how do my actions benefit the community and
mm-hmm.
the rest. When I was wrestling, I broke my hand and I went to this doctor, and that year I happened to be at the ER, it's close to my house, but in the ER like 4 or 5 times, and I kept seeing the same doctor
yeah.
all the time. And so eventually he's like, what do you want to do? And he's asking me questions while he's working on me, and he said, can I give you some advice? I said, sure. And he said, if you want to figure out what you want to do in your life, you have to ask yourself these questions. One, What do you love? Okay, and then number two, how much money do you want to make? So if you love helping people maybe, and you want to make a lot of money, maybe being a doctor is a good idea, but you could also help people being, working somewhere where you don't make as much money, but you're still helping individuals, maybe work in a community garden, helping make food for people. And then, and if you can answer those two questions, then you can kind of figure out where you want to go and decide it. And I thought, like, that's pretty cool. And then as years on, I added something to that. I think at the end of your life, if you can't look back and, not legacy, I don't like that word, but you can't look back and see the good that you did and how you positively improved your community, you will have a sense of regret that you just can't get rid of.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's really important along the way too. I don't know if our athletes are, kids, I mean, the kids that are too young to kind of talk about that, but they just do it naturally all the time. They're always thinking about their community. They always worry about one classmate goes down, they all come over and check him out and see if he's okay. And it's like, it's just natural. But as young adults, I don't know how much they put towards their communities.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's, kids are such a good example because they're so raw. Like, they get like all the negative sides, and you get all the like the really, really positive sides too. Like, kids are the first to tell you that you don't look good, yeah, but they're also the first to tell you that you look great.
And are they raw or are they pure?
I would say both.
Okay. Yes, I would agree with you. Okay. Because I see the pure side too. Like, they're just naturally grateful. They are naturally helpful. They're naturally loving. They'll just give you a hug because that's how they feel. They don't worry about, like, is that okay? Like, there's none of that. It's just, yeah, raw. I guess that is a bit weird too. Yeah.
Well, like you said, with giving back too, like, they're really good at that. And kids are good at, like, such a great example, just because they want to help out, like you said. And then, giving back to your community, I think, too, and to the people around you, I think that what's forgotten about that sometimes is that it's not always about what's best for me is what's best for everybody else. Sometimes it's that I want to do this, but saying no to it is going to benefit the people around me and will have positive impacts on my life.
Yes, you're right. So whatever is best for the community is often what's best for me too.
Yeah, and that doesn't always mean that it's going to be good right now. And so I think people forget that.
Yeah, that sacrifice. Yeah, it's all intertwined. It's all. One of my favorite things to do is hiking in the mountains, because you can pick some really hard shit, and like, it's just like, oh, this is so hard.
Yeah.
Then you get to the top, and there's almost this like, oh, like, it's amazing, and the only way you can get there is by a helicopter or hiking up that hill yourself. And so there's that wear and tear and that pain that has to happen in order for you to have this gratification, and sometimes it takes a long, long time, and you just have to just deal with it. And then at the top, there's always this like sense of, this was amazing, but it is really simple and doesn't really change the world at all. Same with sport. Like, you might go win a world championship, yay for you, but what's next? Now it's just the next day, and it's really not that big of a deal. It's just a little trophy or whatever that sits there. And I wonder, like the big professional athletes who make millions and millions of dollars, billions of dollars, they accomplish all these things, but then what do they do? I love following Shaq, and I don't know enough about his bigger world, but like, I think he kind of is getting that. It's like, I need to be able to do more than just be Shaq. And so he tries to give back, or at least that's how he portrays himself on media.
That's what he says, at least. He seems like, I obviously have never met him and don't know him, but he seems like he's being pretty honest about it. I saw a clip of him one time saying that he wanted to like do a PhD or a master's degree in something. Or maybe it was just a bachelor's. But anyway, he wanted to do some form of post-secondary, and the class he wanted did not have enough people signed up for it. And they were like, we need 30 people to be able to run this class. Like, it'll cost too much to just teach you. So we paid for, like, him and 29 of his friends to go get this degree or something like that. So, yeah, he seems like he's a pretty generous guy that way.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and, like, when you think of someone who has all that power, those resources, they can do all sorts of cool things. I was trying to remind myself, it's a ladder, right? Like, I look up at what he has and what he can do, and it's so much more than me. But there's somebody somewhere looking at me going, wow, like, look at the privilege you have and all the things you can do. And it's that's everyone pretty much, you know, or most anyway. And so any place that you're in your life, you can have change on the world and affect something better. You just have to be willing to make that choice.
Yeah, I think so too. And unfortunately, there are lots of athletes that just skyrocket into fame and success, and it blows up, and they end up having a negative contribution. But I think there are, I think for the most part, they're doing a good thing, even if they are just putting it all back into just themselves and the sport. Because even at the end of the day, if it's just the entertainment value of somebody being able to enjoy a basketball game, I think that's a good thing that they're able to put on that show.
Mm-hmm. I like watching sports. I love watching amateur sports. I love watching sports where someone gets paid a reasonable amount of money for what they do. And like for most professional athletes, you know, since they were 10 years old, that's all they've done. They've sacrificed a lot together. So if they're making millions of dollars, that's fine. When you're making a stupid amount of money, and it just seems, it seems like the very best and the worst of our society kind of all stuck together. And so I have mixed feelings about watching stuff. I'll go watch live stuff, and I love sports where you can actually meet the athletes. I love following MMA because I think the athletes, the fighters, are still very accessible. They're still very real. You can go to your jiu-jitsu class and wrestle with a world championship.
Yeah, they're at the gyms or whatever else.
Yes,
yeah.
it's very rooted in like the beginning, and there's lots of give back there too. I'm sure there is in other sports too. It's just that sport hasn't been around long enough to get to the different levels, or it's a new world sport run differently as opposed to sports who've been around for years, which they're not going to change, and nor should they. Like, so the World Cup in soccer is not going to change. Although the next one, I think, is in Mexico, Canada, and the United States.
All at the same time?
I think so.
Oh, right. I don't follow soccer, to be honest.
But I love that idea. I love the idea of the Olympics being held in Canada instead of all in one city where they potentially, make or break, billions of dollars for their community, and then people who are homeless, but we're spending billions of dollars on a stadium. So
money's a tough one, because it's so, like, you hear about so many things and you're like, do you need to spend that much money? Like, your government, it's like, where did that go? But then it's also like I have those thoughts, and I'm like, well, I don't know anything about government or administrating, so it's like, how do I know that they didn't need to spend that money, or then sometimes they don't spend.
No, and you
don't, it's so tough to
you
know.
Don't hear all the stories, and there's no way they can even explain it to you, or you'd even get it until you're in that situation, like managing people. And anytime I've had managers, which hasn't been a lot, like mostly just teaching, I always try and remember that, like, you're making decisions that are so much bigger than my little situation, that even if I don't agree with you, I have to respect the fact that you're making what you think is the best decision.
Yeah.
And then if I really have a problem with it, I can work to get there and make those decisions myself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's just, it's so easy to put your nose in the business of big things like that, like the Olympics or sports and athletes, and like, it should be this way or that way, but it's so hard. Like you said, you don't know what's going on. And I remember when Texas's power grid failed last year, I think that was. Mm-hmm. Or was it this year, the beginning? I can't remember, but I got into an argument with my buddy, because he was saying that they should have had prep, they should have been able to figure it out and stop it. And I was just like, I don't know anything about running a power grid, let alone a power grid in a place where they probably don't own snowplows. Like, it's just like, I'm not gonna sit here and argue with you about how they should have handled it. I don't know what they did or how it should have gone. And people like to just be like, no, this is the way it should be.
I like following stuff that goes on in the States, simply because it influences our bigger world, or at least our Western world, North America, so much that you have to kind of, if you understand the news, you have to, or what's going on in our communities, in our world, you have to know what's going on there. But it's so easy to get on one side of the polarized argument back and forth. Mm-hmm. And so there's a few people I follow who kind of like presented in a, they share their bias, but then they kind of see a broader picture. And it's always educational. I'm like, if you don't understand this, this, and this, you can't, there's no way you can make a decision or have an opinion about that.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, does that happen in Canada? Probably a little bit too.
Yeah, it's just one, I find that, especially with social media, it seems like everybody thinks they're an expert now. I'm guilty of this as much as the next person. I really try to keep it in check, but it's difficult when you're hearing lots of things. But something comes up and everybody instantaneously knows everything about it and wants to tell you about it.
Well, and if you're having a conversation with somebody, it's easy to just check yourself because you're there. But as soon as it's online or you don't have a connection to that person, it's too hard to get back and forth. That's probably the struggle I find the most about coaching the generation I coach now. Is they are far more comfortable and interested and probably communicate just as well via text or chat or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to have a real conversation with you. I want to like see your eyes. I want to see like how you're feeling about that.
Mm-hmm.
But lots of times they're not comfortable doing that. And so then if I'm doing my job as a coach and serving you, I need to find a way of communicating that you're most comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that's kind of a struggle because it doesn't fit my personality and And for some topics, I really don't think it's the right way of doing it either. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's very, people are so malleable and colorful and different. Like everybody communicates in a different way, and I find it difficult to match my level to other people's, not levels, not the right word. My communication style to other people's. Like some people I find are just. They're talking to me and I'm like, I don't understand what you're saying. Like, you're just like your knowledge. I can't keep up with this conversation. So I'm trying to like, just take it all in. And then I find sometimes I'm trying to explain something to somebody and it's not even that I have necessarily a good grasp on the topic, but I'm just not very good at breaking things down in a digestible way. So it's difficult to communicate that way too. So
mm-hmm.
You gotta be careful about how you come at someone because it's,
yeah, I think that topic is why podcasts become more popular is because you kind of get the, you can have this bits of information, but you see two real people talking.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Joe Rogan. I think that's why he's really popular is because he has real conversations. He doesn't take himself too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And he often says he's talking about stuff that interests him. So he's engaged in everything he talks about.
Yeah,
that's a cool way of approaching life.
It is. Well, that's why I do this, is because I just want to talk to people that I want to learn from. So that's why you're here. I want to learn more about you. And it's nice too, because I find it's a very good excuse to not check my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, we've been having this conversation, just you and I, this whole time. There's been no distractions. And I don't get that a whole lot anywhere else, it seems now.
So, yeah, that's a good point. I try with our kids, that's, like we have tech, and Kingston right now is in the middle of doing lots of videos for Minecraft, and he's really good at it. Like so it's like it's hard to knock it, but that's always a challenge in our house about managing your personal relationships outside of the tech and how the tech comes first sometimes, and it's really frustrating, and it's hard as a parent to give him some space to figure that out yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But I worry that if you don't grow up having meaningful conversations and enjoying those things, that you don't know what you're missing. It's just different, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. Do your boys cheerlead as well?
They do. We kept them out of it for a while, and then we knew that they would kind of gravitate towards it simply because Christina and I were part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of our family, So they did, and there's been some perks. Like if you get to make the schedule and you know when your kids, I can build it so that I'm not at the gym all the time. And so there's some positive and negatives to it. And currently I think they both enjoy it. Will they continue with it? I don't know. I want them to find their passions. I know for Jonah, for sure, he just loves anything active. Like he would play 10 sports all the time if you had a choice. And Kingston, he likes that too, but he really loves like anything to do with computers and gaming and building things. And I mentioned to him the other day, I said, when you get to high school next year, did you know there's like an AV club where like you have to like, he's like, really? That sounds amazing.
That's awesome.
And I was like, I wouldn't think that was amazing, but like, I get why you love it. It's like, okay, so I have the kid who's going to be in that and hopefully do other things too. But so anyway, so they do cheer. They play a few other sports too here and there. I just hope that they find something. And the other reason I think I pushed them into cheer more than Christina, simply because I was a guy who entered a sport that's mostly females.
Mm-hmm.
And so the tone of the sport, the way it's organized, the things they celebrate, the way you present yourself is all has a female lens to it, edge to it. And what a better way to grow up as a young man, into a young man, knowing how girls work.
Yeah.
And being a minority in a sport where, like, they're all talking about stuff, and it's like, he probably doesn't have someone who he can goof around. Like, it's just not the same as being in a hockey locker room with a bunch of boys.
No.
But I think he'll walk away from that with some better understanding of the world and how to see, like, the other gender, perhaps, if you want to separate them and stuff. But just an experience he wouldn't have otherwise. And then he can go from there. So, and it's also a sport that allows, if you do the training, allows you to be strong and flexible and powerful and perform too.
Yeah.
They take the best pictures ever because they know as soon as a picture, they know how to pose and smile. Funny. You're like, you're a cheerleader because you know how to pose.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I would imagine it puts your body in incredible shape. I don't know if you remember me coming to Open Gym,
mm-hmm.
a while ago, but I felt very, very uncoordinated. I think I smoked my head a couple times. Yeah, no, but it's amazing. Do you have trouble attracting boys and men to this sport?
I think you can if you actively choose to. I have mixed feelings about that because we've had these conversations and there's like a push in our sport to bring boys in, and the one side of me says, yeah, I get it. This sport should be available for everyone, and I think it's a great sport for boys
mm-hmm.
and girls anyway, because it's just a great sport. But on the other side of it, I'm like, there's so many sports out there for only boys. The NBA, like all the professional sports are essentially boys only. And so why do you gotta take this one away? Like, just leave it be. Let it. And so if we don't have any guys in our club, I'm cool with that. And even myself, I feel conflicted a little bit because I wish there was... Well, now we have three owners and two of them are women, me. So now, again, it's kind of moving where I think it should go. And so the other cool thing is any of the boys who do get involved in sport, I think they would agree and they would appreciate this comment. They're all a little weird.
Fair enough.
They gotta be the person who's willing to go, I'll go do that.
Yeah.
And then they do, and they're like, oh, this is awesome. Someone who's, you know, too stuck and like, I know, I don't want to stick out. I don't want to. They're not going to, because you are. And when you tell someone you're a cheerleader, they're just like, interesting.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, all these ideas and images come in their head. Some good, some bad. And, So they end up being really interesting people, and they already get it. And we've had a few over the years who, you know, don't quite get it. And there's always a conversation about like, this is a little sacred space for girls who built this amazing sport. So be careful about how you influence that and how you take part in this thing. And so, and again, most get it, and it's a cool thing. So,
yeah. That's really good. It's interesting you say that as a sacred space, because I think that's something that seems to be dissolving, unfortunately, in today. Not that I've noticed in any of my own spaces, but it seems like people are trying to make sacred spaces too open, almost. And not that they are too inclusive, but just that they become too accommodating, I think, sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's... It's interesting that you mentioned that there is a feminine energy and outlook and lens to the sport, and that is inherently what it is. And so I think that if you tried to force it to be more masculine, whether that was 50-50 or there was a completely male division or whatever it was, you'd be fundamentally changing something.
And when you do have a team where, like a co-ed team, where you have, let's say, like 16 boys and 8 girls, the team does not have the same feel. Mm-hmm. It's a very different tone.
I bet, yeah.
Those girls are drowned out. It's just different, and that's not a bad thing. I think it's similar to, like, if I come to your house and you have certain rules about your house, not good or bad, just different. It's my job to respect those rules in your house. And I might ask for some accommodations if they're appropriate, but you have the right to say no, or you maybe you change to help me out. But every space is like that. And so cheerleading might change in the future, but right now, this is a space that was built and created for girls. And so let's just honor that. And so if that means you got to wear some sparkles on your uniform, you got to put, you know, some sparkles in your hair, then that's okay. Or if you go on trips, like Kingston and Jonah, when it comes to hotel rooms and stuff like that, it's just always an awkward conversation and trying to figure it out. But that's just one of those things that you have to deal with being in this really cruel sport.
Yeah, that's the way it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not everything you can make perfect.
Yeah, and I can imagine, like, when they stay in the sport till they're 16, 17, our sport is very open and welcoming to anyone who is gay, someone who's different, someone who's, you know, off that typical line. Everyone's welcomed. And then at the end of this, potentially you go to high school knowing that you have all your friends at high school and all the teachers and stuff. But you have these, like, 16 girls who got you back all the time.
Yeah.
Where were we? We were in Edmonton for a competition. This is university days, and Braden was there and a few other girls on the team. And all the girls generally on the university team are strong girls, and our sport has some contact in it, so you get used to getting kneed in the face every now and then. It happens. So they're tough. And we were walking down the street, and it was like White Avenue, I think, or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And some guys made some comments, and were kind of like picking on Braden a little bit. Mm-hmm. And these three girls, like, they just jumped these guys. Like, it wasn't a fight, but they were in their face. Like, I was like, no, I don't want anything to do with this.
Yeah,
we're out of here.
Trouble, yeah.
But it was like, you know, and that would happen with, you know, a bunch of guys too. But it was just be different. It was really interesting to have, you know, like, anyone who's in that sport, you have all these women, these really strong, confident women who have your back and you can call. And and sometimes, I mean, having a guy you can call, or anyone, but having a girl you can call who's not your girlfriend or your mom or whoever, and help you out is different. And
yeah. Cool. No, I think that'll be a really valuable resource for them, and men in that sport in general. Because there's lots of guys that just don't... There's lots of men that have zero ability to interact with anyone feminine, let alone female.
Yeah, so, just being able to, like, listen to those conversations, be able to have confidence to go talk to someone. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you wrestled in university, and then were you introduced into cheerleading from wrestling? Or?
No. I was wrestling, and like most guys in the sport, it was a girl who I had an art class with, and she was part of the cheerleading team, and we were talking about football, and I said, why don't you come watch us wrestle? And she's like, you gotta come to practice. I was like, all right, whatever.
Yeah.
And I went, and like, you stunt a little bit, and you start throwing girls in the air, you're like, this is really cool.
Yeah.
And I've always been attracted to things that are a little bit different, and I'm generally more comfortable in a group of aunties or girls than I am guy. Like, some guy conversation, typical guy conversation, just doesn't interest me. I don't want to talk about cars.
Like bro talk.
Yeah. And I can do that too.
Yeah.
But it's just I like having these conversations.
Yeah.
And these often are reserved for, like, there are social conversations, and girls will have those conversations more often.
Mm. There's much more nuance in female conversation, I find. It's, I don't know.
I think there's permission to do that.
Yeah.
Society sometimes, but then I did that, and then I got involved, and then I just started doing both, and then I was coaching high school for a long time, high school cheer, and some high school wrestling, but high school cheer, and all the girls who finished that, they had nowhere to go after that, so that's how our club was born, is we wanted a place that they can continue doing it, just like everyone else does, and then that turned into a really cool thing.
Do you coach the university team as well?
I did for years, and then I needed a break from it, just since you just need a break.
Yeah.
I wasn't being the coach I could be, because I needed a break. So I took a break, and then it was kind of, not falling apart, but all the coaches who were in place were like moved out of the province, and someone was going to pick it up. But I was like, if I pick it up, I know I'm going to do a good job of it. So I said, okay, I'm going to take it on. And so I committed to the team unofficially, like for 4 years, I'll commit to coaching this so that anyone who starts with me, you can finish your cheer career with me. Mm. And then I might move on, or I might stay coaching or whatever. And so it's been so much fun, because right now coaching FIFA, our world's team, there's lots of pressure and high level expectations. And it's challenging. And I think the athletes, they've grown to become accustomed to it, but it is hard on them too. Like, it's just a different part of sport. And then the university team, some of those kids have been cheering for years. Some of them have been cheering for 2 months. And we're asking them to do like the hardest things, and they have no idea like what they're getting themselves into. And
yeah.
And so they just trust the process and they will go with it. And so it's just got a different feel to it. And it's really there to, like, everyone fundraises and pays a little bit of money to just pay the bills and just get through the sport. So it's not super expensive, but we still get to travel and still get to compete. So I'm super excited about that. And eventually, it's nice because you have our club and the university team who kind of like partner, and they help each other out. And eventually, some of these university athletes will become coaches if they choose to, or maybe Team Canada, or be on a university or on a world's team. And then all those athletes who are in our club and eventually go to university, now they have a team that they can be part of and cheer in a different way.
That's very cool. Are there any prerequisites for being on the teams, like in terms of years practice, years competed, or?
Well, I think it's just like any other sport. If you have 100 amazing people to pick from, well, then you have lots of prerequisites.
Yeah.
And if you have 20 people to pick from, well, that's your team.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah,
so
yeah,
every year is a little bit different. I think the biggest thing is it's all the things we've been talking about so far. You have to be willing to work hard, you have to be willing to challenge yourself and put the team first.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the biggest lesson they learn is like, I can't miss practice and I have to be on time. And there's prep. And especially in our sport, if you don't show up and you're a top, now you have 4 other people who can't do anything.
Yeah.
Because you didn't show up.
Yeah, you let them down.
Yes. You know, I can't just sub somebody in, not always anyway. And so because of that, you walk away some really good life skills that you don't appreciate until you are in a job, you know, potentially, you know, competing against someone else who hasn't had those experiences and doesn't have those skills.
Yeah, that makes sense. Is it difficult when you've got a big skill, or not even skill gap, but just like a big experience gap for somebody that's like brand new?
Yeah, it's much harder to coach. You have to not lower, but change your expectations. And I mean, the hardest part about it is the safety side of it, because you have to make sure injuries happen in sport, but there's certain injuries you want to stay away from, or, you know, do your very, very best. And so when you have someone who doesn't have experience, you can't even get mad at them when they make mistakes. They just don't know any better. And so that's a bit of a challenging thing. We just finished a routine for the university team, and there's one section where I don't have enough experienced people to make sure all the really important spots are covered. And so I'm like, okay, now how do I figure that out? Over the years, I have this quote in my head that I want to put on a t-shirt. It's going to be, we're the ones we've been waiting for. And like that team,
that team
where you're like, do that. And they're like, yes, I can do that more. And just whatever I throw at them, like whatever I can come up in my brain, they can do.
Yeah.
I'd love to have that team. I've never had that team. And we've had good teams, but never a team like that. But then on the other hand, and that wouldn't be as much fun. You wouldn't have the same impact. Like, they're already like, I'm irrelevant. They can do it.
Yeah.
Like, so who's coaching them?
Yeah.
It's not, you know, like, it is fun when you have, I have one athlete in particular this year who, they don't have as much confidence as I wish they would. And they don't, it's too easy for them to go like down the negative rabbit hole. And then it affects them and the whole team. And like, the best part about this year, I've had the most frustrations there, but it's also been the best when you can see a smile on their face and they're like, yeah, I did
it. Yeah.
And that's cool.
Yeah, that's success. That's awesome. Well, we're at an hour and a half.
Ooh.
So I'll let you get back to your day.
Okay.
Thank you so much for being here. Is there anything else that you wanted to tell me about or talk about, or before I stop it here?
No, I did want to say though that like, this is cool that you asked, and I have really close relationship with your girlfriend Jordan's whole family. And so even their dad, who didn't cheer, but like his sister is married a good friend of mine in high school. Like,
okay,
so it's kind of connected that way. And so, I mean, they've had so many positive impacts on my life, and I've got to know them and watch them grow up. And I've seen Jordan since she was very little until, you know, to the awesome woman she is now. And so helping you out or having this conversation in any way was like a privilege for me too.
Well, thank you. It was a privilege for me, and I really appreciate you coming on. It's been great. And I'm sure they'll be glad to hear that. Oh man, I can't even talk anymore.
I'm excited to hear your finished product if you choose to throw it out there.
So. Oh yeah, it'll be up. I'll work on it today. It might not be up today, but I'll send you a text when it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Oh, and then is there anywhere that we can direct people if they want to sign up for Prairie Fire or the university team? Or
if you Google Prairie Fire cheerleading, we come up and there's opportunities there. And anyone who's heard of All-Star or maybe doesn't know enough about it, like, just come to the club one night and sit and watch. And you watch for 10, 15 minutes and you'll get it right away. You'll feel it in our gym and you get to see it. And it might be a great fit for you and it might not, and that's all okay. But I find that new sports, in particular cheerleading, is just, it's so foreign that no one wants to, like, not sure if this is even for
me. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that makes sense. No, that's a great idea, and you're right. The energy, you know exactly when you see it what it's like. It's very cool. Great.